This is James Corbett, and you're tuned into CorbettReport.com. It's the 15th of April 2010 here in Japan, and today I'm joined on the line by Rebecca Jeske, Media Relations Director for the Electronic Frontier Foundation, a donor-funded nonprofit organization fighting for free speech, privacy, innovation, and consumer rights. Rebecca Jeske, thank you very much for joining me today on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, today I'd like to talk about some good news that we received recently on the EFF website at EFF.org under the headline, Court Rejects Government's Executive Power Claims and Rules That Warrantless Wiretapping Violated Law. But perhaps first we should start by briefly outlining the Warrantless Wiretap program itself and the work that EFF has been doing to attempt to expose this program and its illegality.
Yeah, this story started back in 2005 when EFF learned, along with the rest of the world, about a warrantless wiretapping program run through the NSA. There was a big story just around Christmas at the end of 2005 that the New York Times did. We read the story and were shocked, like many other people. And started to investigate ways where we could perhaps get this program to stop. A little after that, a man named Mark Klein read the same story in the New York Times, and it brought to his mind, he's a retired technician from AT&T, something that had happened when he was working for AT&T. He came into our offices and brought in evidence that about him helping to hook up a secret room that diverted data from AT&T to the NSA. And we filed suit against AT&T, a class action lawsuit against AT&T, in the first few months of 2006. Later that year, USA Today did a big, long article that backed up our allegations and also said that other telecommunications companies were involved, which wasn't a surprise. If the government had interfaced with AT&T asking for this information, it's not a surprise that they would have wanted them from other telecoms as well. So soon there were dozens of lawsuits against telecommunications companies. These continued throughout the courts, and we had a number of wins, but then Congress passed a law, part of the FISA Amendments Act, that gave immunity to the telecommunications companies that were involved in this warrantless wiretapping. So we also sued the government, and that case is called Jewel v. NSA, that makes the same allegations that we made in our AT&T case and really has the same evidence. But we decided to take Congress at its word. They had said if we were really upset with warrantless wiretapping, we shouldn't sue the telecoms, since they were just obeying what the government had asked them to do, then we should sue the government. So we went ahead and sued the government. Both of these cases, unfortunately, we lost on the federal level, and they're under appeal in the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. The AT&T case, because there was a law passed to block it, and we are in the 9th Circuit appealing that case because we believe that the immunity for the telecommunications companies is unconstitutional. And the judge also ruled against us in Juul. Obama administration actually moved to have the Juul case thrown out of court, saying that it would expose state secrets. So we're also appealing that.
So then, specifically, what are the grounds for appealing the immunity for the telecommunications? I would assume that if the program itself is unconstitutional, then the government can't confer that or defer the responsibility from that for corporations that take part in it.
Actually, the legal argument has to do with a separation of powers, which is that that Congress can't do the judiciary's job for it. That it can't say, we are saying, that judges can't rule on this, that we're going to make it proactively legal. So the argument has to do with the separation of powers and the checks and balances.
Very interesting. All right. Well, for people who don't really understand the significance of the bipartisan nature of this issue, can you address the ways in which the legal wrangling and the program itself has continued and even expanded under the Obama administration?
Well, we're not sure how it might have expanded, and you know, the administrations, both the Bush and Obama administrations, have never actually acknowledged that these programs are going and ongoing, but always there's a little doublespeak of, you know, well, if we did it, it would be like this, and we can't talk about it because it's a secret, but the telecommunications companies still need immunity from this thing that we won't admit that we've done. So there still are a lot of questions surrounding, you know, what's going on, but I think it's fair to say that if the Obama administration had stopped this program, then they would have told us.
And they wouldn't be continuing to argue for the immunity of the program itself from legal prosecution.
That's right. That's right. And in fact, the Obama administration has gone even farther than the Bush administration in saying that the administration, in giving the administration, arguing that the administration has immunity and has sovereign immunity to any lawsuits around its potential misbehavior or illegal behavior, which is simply not the way things work in the United States justice system.
So tell us about this latest ruling and its significance and its the context of that case.
Okay. That case is the Al Haramain case. Al Haramain Islamic Foundation was a charity in Oregon that found out through a mistake, basically, that the government had been tapping its phones without a warrant. What happened was during some legal proceedings, the government accidentally sent a confidential piece of information to Al Haramain, which talked about this warrantless wiretapping. Now, no one's allowed to talk about that piece of information. It gets very confusing. People had to go and, you know, read about it in a secret, you know, in a protected chamber and leave the document there. But this was one of the few organizations that had, proof that they had been that they had been wiretapped. Proof from the government itself. This case was grouped with the same judge as all the dozens of telecommunications cases. So they all sort of worked through the courts together with the same judge. But what happened last month is that the judge found that actually made a ruling that the government illegally wiretapped the charity, and said that the government had to be held liable for violating the law.
Well, yes, that's exactly right. So I just want to expand on the significance of that point that you raised, that this is one of the few few organizations that could actually prove it had been wiretapped. Why is that important for establishing their case?
The way that the justice system works here is that you need to be able to prove that you had been harmed. In our Jewel case, the one that the judge ruled against several months ago, he argued that the case had to be thrown out because too many people were harmed, and that there was no way to have a case so big just simply couldn't make its way through the courts. Which is a tough reasoning, and why we're appealing that as well. But this is a case where the law is very clear. There's no wiggling around by saying, like, well, it couldn't be everybody, and how do you know they listened to your conversations and not somebody else, or how do they know they read your email and not somebody else? This is just a very, very clear example, and the government still tried to get out of it, and the judge finally said, no, that's enough. This is as clear as it can be.
Right. So this is the third time that a judge has ruled on the illegality of this program, and the other ones have been appealed by the Department of Justice. What do you expect will be the outcome of this ruling?
Well, it very well may be appealed. The judge said that Al Haramain, which is the charity, can voluntarily dismiss some of the claims and get a final judgment, or they can press some other claims, and then it'll keep going. Truthfully, like all these other cases, the government is likely to appeal, and then it will go to the Ninth Circuit, and then probably ultimately to the Supreme Court.
Well, very interesting, and we certainly do look forward to that. But I guess stepping back to take a look at the broader significance of what we're talking about here, I think everyone has a certain level in which they understand that it's uncomfortable, to say the very least, to have the government engaged in these types of activities. But from your own perspective, what is the real significance of the warrantless wiretapping story, and why is it so important to be pursued in this legal arena?
Well, there are a couple reasons. One is that this program was developed, implemented, and to a certain extent is still ongoing outside of the law. You know, there have been some laws passed in the last few years that have been trying to sort of retroactively make the behavior legal, but we still don't know whether it all is happening under the law, and it certainly started as an extra legal program. It's extremely dangerous to have a government start programs outside the law, to consider itself above the law. The precedents that it starts, the idea that the government, that the administration, that the president can create things and has no checks and balances on it whatsoever, is very scary. On a second level, this idea of indiscriminate surveillance over everyone in America. I mean, if they are, you know, getting at our internet communications, our phone communications, then the government is creating a massive digital dossier on us, on everyone. It becomes a surveillance society. Now, that doesn't mean that every police officer that pulls you over will be able to, you know, pull up a story of your life. But much like an encyclopedia, if you wanted to turn to page, you know, look up or to read about koalas, you could do that, and you could find a lot of information on koalas. And that's sort of what's happening right now in the government, is they're creating these massive dossiers on you that no one decides to look it up. But if they do, what will they find? And if they're wrong, how can you correct it?
That's exactly right. So tell us about some of the other work that EFF is involved in.
Well, EFF does a lot of work in digital civil liberties. So not only are we concerned about privacy in this government spying, but we're also concerned with free speech issues on the internet. One thing that we've been working on actually a lot is government law enforcement trying to get access to the contents of people's email without a warrant, with a lower form of with a subpoena or some other kind of investigative technique. We feel that the contents of your email need to be protected the same way the contents of your postal mail or your phone communications are. So that's something that we do a lot of work around. We're also interested in people making in copyright issues, intellectual property issues. One thing that we see a lot is people making false claims of copyright in order to get critical speech of their product or their business taken offline. That's a big problem. We also see false cases of defamation and things like that, that people use these empty legal threats to scare people out of their First Amendment rights.
All very important issues, and I would certainly suggest people go to EFF.org, as there's a lot of valuable information on that website, including relating to the wiretapping case, things like the affidavit of AT&T whistleblower Mark Klein, and lots of very interesting documentation and information and news and links. So I certainly hope people will check that out. And if people want to support the Electronic Frontiers Foundation, what's the best way they can do that?
The best thing to do is go to www.eff.org. You can find action alerts, ways to take action to support our work, to contact lawmakers around the world about our issues. And there is also a place to give us donations. We are a donor-funded organization. We really depend on people's donations. So please come on by.
All right, Rebecca Jeske, Electronic Frontiers Foundation, thank you very much for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
Thank you.